Chapter 8. Despite his three-indiction stay among the Abrekti, Eleven Lathe neglected to provide the Empire scientists with much in the way of physiological information. His dispatches is a work of philosophical and moral exploration, and perhaps a person cannot be expected to provide both a spiritual exegesis of living amongst aliens and an accurate description of their physical habits, development, diet, and morbidities. But the sheer weight of absence in the text of much practical information means that readers of the dispatches are far more acquainted with Eleven Lathe's mind than they are with an Abrekti body, or an Abrekti anything at all. We sent a poet where we ought to have sent a team of explanatal researchers. Introduction to a scholarly commentary on dispatches from the Numinous Frontier, composed on commission by the explanatal II Cantonary, Chief of Medical Ethics at the 12 Solar Flare Memorial Teaching Hospital. Query, / author, Onchu pilots, / re-implantation. There are no records including re-implantation in the database. Please refine your search and try again. Query, / author, Onchu pilots, / imago repair. 237 results found. Display, refine search, refine. / author, Onchu pilots, / surgical, or post-traumatic. 19 results found, displaying in alpha order. Record of queries made to LaSalle Medical Research Database by Dekakel Onchu, 92.1.1-19A, takes Kalanli Reckoning. On the other side of the last jump gate between them and the war was the fleet, or at least 6 legions worth of the fleet, and a swath of support ships darting between the hulking elegance of the larger destroyers and flagships and gunners. The array of them all ate up the visible stars. There weren't many stars to start with. Mahit knew this sector of space, though she'd never been to it before. It was resource poor, takes Kalanli controlled, and LaSalle Station kept a watch on it and did little else. It was also where Daj Taratz had first noticed the alien she'd just spent a nauseating 6 hours listening to, over and over, until she was sure she'd dreamed that sequence of static and metallic squalling and auditory afterimage. This was the sector that had disappeared sufficient numbers of LaSalle pilots to make a pattern that first Taratz, and then later Dekakel Onchu, could notice. Notice, take note of, and use. And nevertheless, there weren't enough stars here. No stars. No sky, like on the city or any other planet. And only an enormous amount of Tixkalanli firepower to steer by. They were very beautiful, all those ships. Mahit's childhood had been full of breathless horror biopics about what the fleet could do to a planet. Not a station, never a station, always a planet, always far away. But it was easy to extrapolate. And equally breathless serial dramas about life on a Tixkalanli legionary ship. All uniforms and poetry contests off shift. Fuck. But she'd devoured those like sugar pastilles. She could probably still explain the plots, the convoluted love stories and the politics and multi-season faction swapping, and here she was. And even after all that had happened in the city 3 months ago, she still felt doubled. Vertiginous and falling. The self that experienced and the self that evaluated, wondered, is this when I feel real? Is this when I feel like a civilized person? And the self that sounded like Yaskander, dark and amused, is this when I forget what being a stationer feels like? How about now? Now, are we still Mahit Dismar? She had imagined the fleet, and feared it and admired it, and seeing it was still a profound discontinuity. 3 Seagrass had no such problems. She had effortlessly infiltrated the affections, or at least the interest, of the Jasmine Throat's comms officer. And now that they were in hailing range of the fleet's flagship of flagships, the Yautlek 9 Hibiscus's very own weight for the wheel, she leaned over his shoulder and took control of the transmission. This is Special Envoy 3 Seagrass aboard the supply ship Jasmine Throat, she said. Hailing the flagship, wait for the wheel. You called for the Information Ministry, I believe. There was a long pause, longer than the time it would take for the transmission to cross the sublight distance between the two ships. Mahit imagined that other bridge. Were they surprised? Annoyed? Had they even been warned about the advent of 3 Seagrass? At last, a transmission came back. An arch-tenor voice, smooth and completely unaccented, as if whoever was speaking had learned Tix Kalanli from newsfeeds, or was a newsfeed anchor himself. Welcome to the 10th Legion, Envoy. This is the Akantlos Prime 20 Cicada, acting as adjutant for the Outlek herself. She regrets being occupied at the moment and unable to greet you properly.
Formality, 3 Seagrass said smoothly, is for the Imperial Court. This is a battlefield. I look forward to speaking with the Outlek whenever she has time to spare. We'll be on board shortly, adjutant. We'll come in with your supplies on the Jasmine Throat shuttle.
We? Asked that voice. And Mahit thought, well, so much for this being simple.
We? 3 Seagrass agreed, enthusiastically. I've brought a consultant linguist. She's a barbarian, but don't hold it against her. She's brilliant.
And then she cut the connection on the adjutant, on the man who was the second most powerful person in the entire 10th Legion. Mahit couldn't decide if she was horrified, proud, or simply, deliciously, hideously intrigued. She watched 3 Seagrass straighten up, flash a wide-eyed Tix Kalanli smile at the comms officer, and crack her spine, leaning back with her hands laced together behind her. Getting ready, Mahit thought. I should too. Consultant linguistum, is that what I am now? She asked. 3 Seagrass shrugged, one shoulder and one hand in brief motion.
If you'd rather be the Lascelles ambassador to Tix Kalan, I can reintroduce you when we get there.
She brushed Mahit's wrist with warm fingertips as she passed by, and Mahit followed her easily, thinking of flowers that turned towards sunlight, and less pleasant tropisms. Gravity wells, the attraction of insects to rot.
Which reminds me, Mahit, if you want to be the Lascelles ambassador, do you have the authority to negotiate with our screaming aliens on behalf of your station?
I don't see why not, Yaskander murmured to her. No one else is going to, and you're right here.
Oh, fuck it. Why not be an ambassador and a diplomat? Be useful again. Have authority and room to use it and use for Lascelles as well as for Tix Kalan. Do something more than escape and be Taratza's corroding agent. Do something. The supply shuttle in the Jasmine Throat's hangar was being loaded with practiced efficiency. Gray metal case after gray metal case heaved inward by a small assembly line of Tix Kalanlitzlem. 3 Seagrass and Mahit joined the line, as if they were cargo themselves, though Mahit doubted they'd be tossed bodily inside.
Of course I have that authority, said Mahit. No one unambassadored me, 3 Seagrass, no matter what the Counselor for Heritage implied.
She didn't, said 3 Seagrass, sounding quite interested indeed, and slipped inside the shuttle. Over her shoulder, she added,
Imply that.
Fuck, Mahit said. Well, that's unexpectedly pleasant, all considered.
And didn't go on any further. She didn't want to. She couldn't tell 3 Seagrass that she was here to spy on the war for Daj Taratz, in order to escape Aknel Amnarbat's surgeons. To do worse things for Daj Taratz, if there was an opportunity. She couldn't. So she got into the shuttle instead, settling amongst the supply crates and strapping herself into some free-fall control webbing. There were similar webbings on all of the walls, the floor, the ceiling. It was an efficient, well-designed ship. It must make 100 of these short hops in a month.
Quite,
said 3 Seagrass. All edges, interest and wariness, and a sort of invitation deferred.
We can play, Mahit, even if we don't play just now, if playing's what you want.
The shuttle door sealed behind them with a hiss of vacuum. And Mahit shut her eyes against acceleration. It took too long to approach wait for the wheel, longer than Mahit expected, given how huge the flagship was. It had seemed very close from the bridge of the Jasmine Throat. Now it was growing larger and larger through the small viewport inside the supply shuttle, until it was horizon and sky and ground all at once, a solid wall of ship that seemed to be the entire visible universe. A solid wall of ship with a discontinuity, a maw, black and wide, a hangar bay. And that, too, was too large and growing larger all the time, gaining color and dimension as the shuttle approached it. A hangar bay which could contain not only this sizable supply shuttle, but hundreds of tiny triangular ships, arrayed in racks awaiting their pilots, and other large vessels besides, and still have room for at least 10 shuttles the size of this one. A hangar bay with a ceiling as high as some buildings had been in Palace Central down on the city. They landed with hardly a shudder, and Mahit was on a Taixkalanli warship for the first time in her life. The shuttle doors opened immediately, and as Mahit and Three Seagrass released their webbing harnesses, they were swarmed by enterprising Taixkalanlitslim. Soldiers in stripped-down and functional uniform, gray and gold coveralls with reinforced patches at the knee, their name glyphs and the insignia of the 10th Legion on the left shoulder. Swarmed and ignored in favor of the supply crates. It was like being inside an enormous machine that had absolutely no interest in you, since you weren't shaped like the sort of object the machine preferred to ingest and spit out again on the other side. Three Seagrass flashed her a smile, lightning-quick widening of the eyes, the barest hint of white teeth. Ready? As I'm going to be, said Mahit. And just as she had once before, stepped off a shuttle and into Taixkalanli space to see what was waiting for her there. The hangar was busy. This shuttle wasn't the only one being unloaded, and there were so very many soldiers. The fleet was enormous. Mahit thought of the 30,000 stationers on LaSalle and how that had once, when she was a small child, seemed like a very large number of people. There were probably 3,000 Taixkalanlitslim on this flagship, maybe more, and at least 10 large ships this size only on this battlefront. There was LaSalle entire, rendered in Taixkalanli battle flags, and so many other ships besides, all over the galaxy, on the other side of nearly every jump gate. Some of the soldiers were obviously injured. One ship in this hangar was scorched almost black, partially absent, and the people climbing out of it were bleeding, or burnt, or being carried on stretchers by efficient medical personnel.
That's what a ship looks like after it gets brushed with energy cannon fire, Iskander murmured to her, horrified and fascinated, as horrified and fascinated as she felt herself. That's what these aliens can do to this fleet. No matter how many soldiers there are in Taixkalan, all ships burn the same. All ships burn the same, Mahit thought. Echo, stutter thought. And then Three Seagrass tapped her lightly on the shoulder, gesturing across the crowds with her chin, pointing out that they had clearly, been expected. She and Three Seagrass had been sent an escort, and that escort was waiting for them. A man and a woman, each in full fleet uniform, instead of the hangar worker coveralls. The man was tall, terrifyingly thin, and had shaved his head absolutely bald. The first bald Taixkalanlitslim that Mahit had ever seen, who wasn't also old. The woman was all the same color all over, an electrum shade, hair and skin only fractionally different. She wore a fleet captain's sunburst on her shoulder, and Mahit wondered for a moment if this was the Yautlek herself. But no, it couldn't be Nine Hibiscus. This woman's legion insignia was different. The glyph for 24 turned into a stylized parabola. Not this legion's fleet captain, but on this legion's flagship nevertheless. And coming to greet the information agent, too.
Mahit didn't have much time to wonder about internecine competition between the legions making up the attack force. She was a fractional step behind Three Seagrass, feeling utterly drab and barbaric in her jacket and trousers, next to that spot of flame coral and everyone else's perfect fleet uniforms. And the two-person high-powered welcoming committee wasn't waiting for them to get close. They were coming to meet them in the middle of the hangar. It looked like it was the woman's idea. She strode forward, long ship circumnavigating strides that ate up the space, and the man shot her a look of absolute unbridled displeasure, so quickly blooming and gone again from his face that Mahit wasn't entirely sure she hadn't imagined it. He followed after, catching up in the space of four steps. They coincided beneath the glittering curve of a bank of those triangular fighter ships. Three Seagrass bowed to the two fleet representatives over her fingertips, a deep but not servile greeting, and Mahit imitated it right down to the angle. She was a barbarian, but she was also supposed to be here, wasn't she? She was. Supposed to be surrounded by all the swarming might of the Tixkalonli military, too huge and too complex to be seen all at once.
"Breathe," murmured Yiskander.
And Mahit did, one long breath as she straightened up.
"The envoy and the linguist diplomat," said the man,
that same arch-tenor voice that had emerged from the calm. This must be the adjutant, the Akantlos Prime 20 Cicada. And wasn't that interesting? That a man who looked so very un-Tixkalonli, aside from the perfection of his uniform, unfashionably worryingly thin, bald. This close, Mahit could tell that he didn't even have eyebrows. He'd shaved them off. And Tixkalonlitzlum were usually so proud of their hair, wore it long and braided, or long and loose. And yet, here he was, second in command of the lead flagship of a Tixkalonli imperial war. What sort of yautluck has this man as her second?
An interesting one. Look at his hands, Mahit. See the tattooing on the wrists. He's a homeostat cultist.
There were tattoos, just barely visible under the sleeves of his uniform. Green branching things. Fractals.
A what, cultist?
In a minute. Pay attention, Mahit.
The woman had not bowed.
I see that the Information Ministry has sent Nine Hibiscus one very young woman. And one barbarian, she said, ice clear. A fantastic showing. I'm sure the two of you will be of profound help to her.
20 Cicada said, in murmured, perfect formality.
The Fleet Captain 16 Moonrise of the 24th Legion,
and gestured, as if he was displaying her as a curiosity.
Our honored guest today.
16 Moonrise failed, with deliberation and malice aforethought, to match 20 Cicada's utterly polite tense usage.
Let's get on with it, shall we, adjutant? Now you've got the spook and her pet all picked up, show me to what we all came here to see. The body.
The body? Asked Three Seagrass, as if none of this byplay mattered at all.
The body, 16 Moonrise said. Of the things you're here to talk to. How good is information at raising the dead?
It isn't my specialty, Three Seagrass said.
The Yautlik is expecting all of us in the medical bay morgue,
20 Cicada confirmed, ignoring all insinuations of necromantic powers.
We do have a body to show you, envoy. It doesn't talk, but it ought to show you something. Shall we?
Ring composition, Mahit thought. Around we go. I've only just arrived and it is time to see a corpse. At least it won't be your corpse, Yiskander.
A man can only die so often,
said Yiskander, which was hideously funny. Mahit had to work to keep her face still. It wouldn't be useful, just now, to make the Tixkalonlitzlum think that the barbarian talked to invisible ghosts inside her head. Invisible, blackly hilarious ghosts. That wouldn't be useful at all. This time, there was no elevator down into the basement of the judiciary, no knot of explanatlum in red huddled around a body, and no modest sheet covering the corpse. Mahit arrived in this morgue just as a medtech lifted two enormous lungs out of the splayed-open barrel of an alien ribcage and bore them off to be weighed and measured, tested for oxygenation, for cause of death, for whatever else takes Kalanlitslam tested alien body parts for. The ribcage, eviscerated of lungs, gaped like naked wings on either side of the alien's long neck. Behind it, looking down at it like she could read fortunes in its hollowness, was the Yautlek. Mahit knew her by her sunspear epaulets, but she was also quite precisely what Mahit had imagined a Yautlek to look like, if that Yautlek wasn't the unlamented one Lightning, he of the near usurpation 3 months back. Nine Hibiscus was large and sleek, solid muscle under a generous curve of fat, all hips and smooth outcurve of belly, broad shoulders and broad chest, thighs like the steady steel T-bars that constructed station decks. She looked like someone who could never be moved. She looked like it would take months of searching for an actress who perfectly suited when some Takes-Kalanli Hollow production did an epic about this war. Takes-Kalanli Central Casting couldn't have done better. The first thing that came out of Mahit's mouth, seeing her, was, "That alien did not make those sounds from that throat, Yautlek." As if she thought direct clarity would prove her usefulness beyond reproach of barbarism. 5 points for drawing the obvious conclusion, said Nine Hibiscus, in a smooth, attentive low alto that reminded Mahit of nothing so much as 19 Adza's calm and terrifying precision. Are you a xenobiologist, then?
The spook brought a pet, said the other fleet captain.
16 Moonrise. Nine Hibiscus looked at her with what Mahit suspected was deep dislike, under multiple layers of propriety and projected authority.
I am not a xenobiologist, Mahit said, deciding that 16 Moonrise's opinions of her were unlikely to become less hostile if she answered the Yautlek's question. I am Mahit Dismar, the ambassador to Takes-Kalan from LaSalle Station and LaSalle Station's diplomatic authority in this sector.
The ambassador is a linguist and a translator, said Three Seagrass. I'm the spook.
She paused, entirely for effect.
We're here to help.
The adjutant, 20 Cicada, made an entirely remarkable noise, like he'd drowned a laugh and swallowed its corpse. Three Seagrass either neglected to notice or neglected to care. She went on, saying,
It is exquisite to make your acquaintance, Yautlek. I and the Information Ministry are grateful for the opportunity to be of service in this first contact scenario. What a fascinating throat this alien has.
And yet, said the Yautlek, your linguist translator ambassador is entirely sure that it cannot have made the sounds on our transmission, however fascinating it may be. Care to explain? For my edification and for the fleet captain 16 Moonrise, of course.
When she looked at 16 Moonrise, she smiled enough to show a tiny flash of teeth, and Mahit's mouth went metallic and dry at the sense of threat. A Takes-Kalanli general who would bare her teeth while smiling. All energy. All danger.
She's very good,
Iskander murmured, and Mahit agreed with him. Nine Hibiscus was exquisitely in command, even when surprised, as she had clearly been surprised by 16 Moonrise. Mahit suspected she hadn't even known the fleet captain was on board her flagship until she'd walked into this makeshift morgue with Mahit and Three Seagrass, who was in the middle of saying, serene and direct,
After extensive audio analysis of the samples you sent to the Ministry of Information, we believe that the sounds on the transmission are tonal markers, not specific speech. And unless this alien has got vocal cords made of synthesizers and a theremin, it can't have made them by itself.
You could dissect it and find out, though, Mahit added, to be certain that it isn't capable of producing sound via oscillating magnetic fields.
You've dissected the rest, added 16 Moonrise. You might as well look at its neck. Since I'm here, I'll stay and watch.
It's my soldiers who are being killed by these things most imminently, after all.
If I'd known you were on board the Wait for the Wheel, Fleet Captain, said 20 Cicada, silkily, more than 2 minutes before you met me in the hangar bay, I would have made sure you were also invited to the autopsy.
Mahit couldn't turn around to see 16 Moonrise's reaction, and having it occur behind her made her feel peculiarly exposed, her skin prickling with the crawling sensation of being watched, even if she wasn't at all the focus of the watcher. She wanted to see. This tangle of fleet captains was significant, important. If she and Three Seagrass were going to be useful enough to survive this war, she had to understand it.
You are still thinking like we're trying to get away from Counselor Omnarbad, Iskander whispered to her. Useful enough to survive this war. It's not that bad. Yet.
Yet, Mahid thought. But it's politics, and I need to understand
the shape of it. Who wants information here, and who doesn't?
And then Iskander slipped away from her, a banked fire just out of reach, like some fish streaking silver-sided into the shadows of the hydroponic tanks. 16 Moonrise, whatever her expression was saying,
Swarm, I had always believed better of you. Porcelain fragments scorched, docked 4 hours back, and I have been cooling my heels all unknown to the adjutant of our Yautlek.
20 Cicada. Swarm. Mahid remembered what Iskander had said to her when she'd caught sight of his tattoos. Homeostat cultist, with the name of an insect, a pervasive insect. Tixkalan Leedslam weren't supposed to have names which were animals, at all. Did insects not qualify as animals? She'd always assumed they did. Nine Hibiscus watched the squabble with that same threatening impassiveness that seemed to be endemic to her, and then set her hands down on the metal autopsy table, heavily enough to quell any further sniping. One on either side of the alien's head, as if she could crush it between her palms.
Stay, 16 Moonrise. See the inside of our enemy. The medtech will fill you in on what you've missed. Now, you.
She pointed at Three Seagrass with her chin. I want to know if either you or your barbarian linguist can talk back with these tonal markers you say you've identified. That's the whole point of you. Figure out how to talk to these things before I decide they're not worth the trouble of talking to.
What's your broadcast system like?
Three Seagrass asked, bright and effervescent, as if this would be no trouble at all.
Mahit knew better.
They'd barely started interpreting the sounds on the transmission, spent half of their interpretation time too nauseated to think, breathing in gasps against the wrongness of those sounds. They might be able to say something to the aliens, but it was almost certainly going to be a wrong thing, a half-formed and misshapen utterance, distorted by human tongues and human minds.
But it might draw them in close, Iskander murmured. And she thought,
bait.
Just like Daj Taratz had used Lascelles as bait for Tixkalan. Just as she herself was bait now, for Three Seagrass, for this fleet, if she acted as Taratz's saboteur. She didn't know how she could. She didn't.
You don't want to.
I don't want to be bad at my job on purpose, Mahid thought,
a vicious little stab of a phrase, and felt Yaskander's answering query of, oh, and your job is first contact protocols now? As a stabbing pain from elbows to fourth fingers, and her own voice in her own head. They were so very close now, and still the places they were misaligned bloomed into pain.
We can prepare a transmission to be intercepted on the frequency they used, said Nine Hibiscus to Three Seagrass. Once you have a transmission to send, bring it to me first. 20 Cicada will show you to your quarters and to the communications workroom.
That was some sort of a dismissal. The next gesture the Yautlek made, calling the medtech in his red scrubs over, and 16 Moonrise to stand by her side and watch, was another. Mahit bowed deep over her fingertips and found herself distressed all over again,
by the comfort of knowing that gesture was appropriate again, here. At how easily she'd been scooped up out of the station, slipped easily into the politics and pleasures and poisons of Tixkalan. At how much she wanted to be useful. And how much she hated that wanting. The throat of the alien peeled open under her medtech scalpel like a perfectly ripe fruit. Inside, Nine Hibiscus could see the usual sort of muscles, still sluggishly oozing red. Oxygenated blood. It hadn't been dead very long, this alien, and wasn't that disturbing, if she thought about it too deeply. This thing had been alive, and hungry, and acting with its own inexplicable intelligence, less than half a day ago. And if it wasn't cut open like this, it could have been hiding, pretending, lying in wait to spring. 16 Moonrise, persistent at her left elbow, leaned in and peered at the flash of the scalpel blade as it sliced the muscle free and revealed something that looked like a trachea, ribbed and rubbery. "It looks like a normal throat," she said, and Nine Hibiscus wondered how many throats her fellow fleet captain had dissected personally. "Open it, at the top, where the larynx should be," Nine Hibiscus said, and her medtech did. There were laryngic membranes, all right. A large but, from what she could remember from basic anatomy eons ago at the Fleet Academy in her first year, standard sort of arrangement. Folds of alien flesh at the top of the alien trachea, all very regular and mammalian standard. Closable to keep food out of the airway, capable of vibrating to produce sound when air was forced through them. Nothing that looked like it could produce those machine-screaming resonant noises from the intercepted recording. 16 Moonrise said, "Go lower, where the trachea branches into the lungs. It has lungs, right?" The lungs were resting in metal basins across the surgery come autopsy room on a shelf. Nine Hibiscus pointed at them. "It had lungs. Two of them." Whatever political game 16 Moonrise was playing, coming onto her flagship and invading her medical labs, it seemed to have paled before the possibility of having come up with a good idea. Nine Hibiscus wondered if she'd aimed for a medical career before she joined the fleet, or was just the sort of ghoul who watched autopsies and studied the inner workings of bodies for her own amusement. "Go lower," she repeated, and her eyes were wide in a satisfied grin. Nine Hibiscus nodded to her medtech, and he did as 16 Moonrise was suggesting, splitting the tube of the trachea open so it lay nearly flat, a ridged strip of stiff flesh. Where it began to divide, there was something, a bony structure like another voice box, surrounded by what looked like a deflated balloon, connected to a whole series of muscles Nine Hibiscus definitely did not remember from basic anatomy. "A syrinx," said 16 Moonrise, with profound satisfaction. "Birds have them. Your spook and her pet are wrong, Yautlek. This alien can make all sorts of horrible noises with that thing." The balloon around it must be the part that vibrated, Nine Hibiscus thought, and the muscles were what held it at appropriate levels of tension. With a certain delicious squeamishness, she reached into the alien's throat and stretched the membrane between her fingertips. It was strong and thick. Her fingertips were red. If this had been her kill, she'd have smeared the blood on her forehead in victory. But she didn't deserve that yet. "Cut it out," she directed the medtech, "with as many of the muscles as you can keep, and preserve it. I suspect my spook and her pet," that for 16 Moonrise's benefit, an acknowledgement, a sidewise appreciation of the other fleet captain's skill at predicting autopsy results, "might want to use it to make some of those noises themselves." "So you are trusting the information agent," said 16 Moonrise. They'd come away from the table to let the medtech do his work. Nine Hibiscus hadn't washed her hands yet. There was something satisfying about having touched the alien, and not being dead or dissolving. Some small part of the mystery of them undone. They died. They died and bled and cooled and were peculiar, but entirely understandable as collections of organs. Just meat, like any other dead thing. "Why shouldn't I?" she asked 16 Moonrise.
And if you tell me, because she's a spook, I will have to revise your intelligence downward, and that would be a shame. Specifics, Fleet Captain.
16 Moonrise refused to bristle, which 9 Hibiscus gave her some credit for. She said,
You have no idea who she is, or where her loyalties lie, except perhaps to Tix Kalan. She's not Fleet. This...
She gestured at the alien, the medical bay, the whole situation, is Fleet work.
I never imagined the hero of Kuran would want to bring in outsiders to prosecute a war. With all due respect, Yautlek.
I'm not a hero, 9 Hibiscus found herself saying. I'm a soldier, and Kuran was won by soldiers using the best possible intelligence I could procure. I don't deny my people resources, Fleet Captain. I provide them. The information agent will get us what we lack, without exposing my people, or yours, or 40 Oxides, or anyone's, to these aliens any more than is strictly necessary.
The fleet has an intelligence service, said 16 Moonrise, and left it there, hanging between them like a challenge. Why haven't you gone to the third palm, O Yautlek, if you are so concerned with providing adequate resources?
She didn't need to say it. 9 Hibiscus could hear it very well in the silence of the room, interrupted only by the occasional squelch of alien fluids coming from the medtech at work behind them.
We don't do first contact, she said, as if that was an adequate answer.
Information does, and there's only one spook, 16 Moonrise, far more controllable than a squadron of third palmers.
A flicker of some emotion behind those pale eyes. 9 Hibiscus wondered if she'd given 16 Moonrise too much information about her own distaste for the fleet's intelligencers. That would only be a true problem if the fleet captain of the 24th was herself a third palmer. Or had been, before she became an officer. She had to check her public records, or have swarm do it. But they'd been so busy. One spook and one barbarian, said 16 Moonrise, eventually.
A spook I could understand. One with an agenda that includes foreigners who were involved with starting this war. That, Yautlek, disturbs me. She's from LaSalle Station. LaSalle Station is the little independent entity that told us about these aliens in the first place and brought down One Lightning, yes, 9 Hibiscus said. One Lightning, and Minister 9 Propulsion along with him.
Minister 9 Propulsion, 9 Hibiscus's patron and mentor, her political protection. 16 Moonrise was implying that 9 Propulsion hadn't retired, but that she'd been implicated in the coup, been pushed out and replaced.
I'm sure the former minister is enjoying her retirement, 9 Hibiscus said.
It was so difficult to imagine 9 Propulsion doing something like getting involved in an attempted usurpation. She'd always been so careful, a watchful eye in the city, steady enough that 9 Hibiscus had felt she could always take appropriate risks and be backed up.
Retirement is an interesting way to put it, said 16 Moonrise. Half the ministry turned over, Yautlek. That's not retirements.
That was a goad. She was trying to get 9 Hibiscus to complain about the new emperor, about the new minister of war, 3 Azimuth, the very people who had given her this command, who had sent her out here to defeat an impossible force with only one of 6 legions, half of which had signed on to 16 Moonrise's little letter of insubordination, which suggested, unpleasantly, that 16 Moonrise was right, and she was being punished for being 9 Propulsion's protege. And 9 Propulsion had been in on the attempted usurpation after all. And if she said any of that, she'd be playing into whatever political game 16 Moonrise had brought with her from the ministry to the front lines. She'd be admitting that her own loyalties might not be to the Empire, or even the Ministry of War. She refused to be entrapped like this. A new emperor has new military priorities, and 3 Azimuth deserve the promotion. To tell you the truth, Fleet Captain, I hope I do as well as 9 Propulsion has when my time in the front lines is done.
Let 16 Moonrise think she hadn't picked up the insinuation of 9 Propulsion's disloyalty. Let her think she was simpler than she was.
With your record, I can't imagine otherwise, 16 Moonrise said,
which was vicious. 9 Hibiscus could hate her. If she didn't need her and her 24th Legion to win this war, she could hate her quite a lot.
That's a lovely thing to say, she told her, and smiled with the edges of her teeth showing.
16 Moonrise matched her, that sliver of tooth bone like a threat.
What I'm trying to convey, Yautlek, ministers all aside, is that I don't trust anything that came from LaSalle Station, and attached to a spook just makes it worse.
There was some agenda here, a deeper and more unpleasant one than a rivalry between fleet captains. 16 Moonrise wanted the Third Palm involved with this war. She wanted it very, very much. And that meant someone in the ministry, or the rest of the palace, wanted political officer attention on what 9 Hibiscus was doing.
I do appreciate your candid opinion, Fleet Captain, she said. And be assured, I will keep as many eyes on the spook as are necessary. Let's see what sort of work she does for us. I'll reserve my judgment.
As you like, 16 Moonrise said. I believe your tech has extracted the syrinx, Yautlek. Fill it full of air, and see if it screams for you, before you let the spook have it. And with that, she saluted, spun on her heel, and left 9 Hibiscus alone with the dismembered corpse of their enemy, which had begun to stink of decomposition. The Adjutant 20 Cicada did not escort 3 Seagrass and Mahit to whatever quarters were prepared for them. Instead, he mentioned, in an offhand fashion 3 Seagrass recognized intimately, the precise air of a person who had to deal with vastly more complex logistics management problems than this present one at least 4 times a day, that while their quarters were reconfigured for 2 beds instead of 1, the pair of them could get straight to work.
Envoy, he said, as they followed him through the busy, fine-kept corridors of the Wait for the Wheel, being watched with unabashed curiosity by all sorts of fleet personnel. Your cloud hook should have a map of the ship now that you're aboard. You and Ambassador Dismar have the communications workroom until 2200 hours, and the Yautlek will want some sort of result at that point.
He glanced back over his shoulder with a sharp smile, a narrow movement of the eyes and the corners of the mouth. Smiling looked odd on a person who lacked eyebrows and hair. 3 Seagrass had never interacted with a person who took homeostasis practice so seriously. Most people with an unusual religion were less pointed about reminding you of it. She was interested, she decided. Interested in how this man had come to his high place of power, while looking ever so not quite civilized. But eyebrows or none, 3 Seagrass suspected 20 Cicada knew his master 9 Hibiscus well enough to have meant what he said. The Yautlek would want a report at the end of the evening shift, no matter how late that shift ended or how well matched it was with the Yautlek's own sleeping schedule.
She'll have it, 3 Seagrass said, and bowed very deeply when 20 Cicada took this promise as sufficient collateral to nod to the both of them and disappear off at an angle on some business of his own. Not an errand boy, that one. Not someone who usually escorted stray information agents around the ship. Not that an adjutant would be. And, oh, there was the map, gleaming in tracery over her cloud hook. 4 decks up toward the bow. Easy enough.
Follow me, she said to Mahit, who was being very quiet. Unusually so, especially after she'd been all flash-fire forwardness in the med bay.
Had Fleet Captain 16 Moonrise spooked her? 3 Seagrass didn't remember Mahit spooking easily. But spooked or not, she followed, close at 3 Seagrass's left shoulder, their habitual positions all reversed. The ship map overlaid on the right side of her vision was easy to follow. Someone, probably 20 Cicada, had highlighted their destination with a small glowing star, and they moved up 3 levels of the enormous flagship without incident. On the 4th, though, oh, there was the security-conscious fleet that Three Seagrass had always been taught about in information briefings. It came in the person of a serenely massive fleet soldier, his hair in a neat queue, his energy pistol, all right, energy pistols, plural, holstered with elegant threat at each hip, who barred the door that Three Seagrass's map required them to pass through on their way to the communications workroom. This soldier held out a hand, palm flat and authoritative, and Three Seagrass lurched to a stop with Mahit just behind her.
"You are both out of uniform," said the soldier. "Her especially."
He indicated Mahit with his chin.
"What is your business on this deck?"
"I am the envoy Three Seagrass, seconded here by the Information Ministry," said Three Seagrass, with some annoyance. Wasn't her envoy suit uniform enough? But perhaps this soldier had never seen one. "And this is Ambassador Mahit Dismar. Do check your manifest, sir. We're on our way to the communications workroom on the Yautlek's orders."
The soldier blinked through some search function on his cloud hook, found whatever he was looking for, and then made her and Mahit wait. She could feel Mahit's nervous energy, like a thrumming power generator at her side. And yet her barbarian continued not saying anything. After an interminable 15 seconds, the soldier pressed his fingertips together in the most cursory of acknowledgments and waved them through.
"To the left, envoy. Ambassador," he said,
as if there had been absolutely no reason to stop them. It happened again, approximately 200 feet down the corridor, the instant they'd passed out of visual view of one soldier and into the purview of the next. Three Seagrass was unpleasantly reminded of the sunlit of her childhood, before the algorithmic reform, back when they would ask you the same questions if you'd switched jurisdictions, no matter how many jurisdictions you passed through. This soldier was shorter, brisker, and visibly horrified at Mahit's lack of propriety. Her complaint about, "You are both out of uniform," was accompanied by an encompassing hand gesture, shoulder to foot, as if to suggest, "What is a nice envoy like you doing with a jacket and trouser set like that?" Three Seagrass expected Mahit to take point on this one, to give the explanation of who they were, as confidently as she'd introduced herself to the Yautlek in the medical bay. But she didn't. She raised her eyebrows at Three Seagrass until Three Seagrass repeated what she told the last soldier, suffered through the waiting as the soldier consulted her cloud hook, and then breezily waved them onward. The third time, at the door of the communications workroom itself, was just insulting. The previous impediment was still in view, and doing absolutely nothing about informing her compatriot that the two people standing in front of her had reasonable and assigned business behind the door she was guarding so assiduously. "You're," the soldier began. "Out of uniform, yes," Mahit snapped. At last. Snapped with a fluid and vicious intonation Three Seagrass didn't remember her using back in the palace. Something in the tone, the deep and bored dismissal of the problem at hand.
"I wonder what Yaskander Agavin sounded like when he was pissed off," she thought, and didn't like thinking it. "If you would check your records," she added, before Mahit could say anything else.
"There's no need to be so abrupt, envoy," said the soldier, which didn't help. If this one knew who she and Mahit were, why under every single bleeding star wasn't she letting them into the workroom?
"We have orders to be inside that workroom," Mahit said, with that same silky viciousness, her Tix Kalanli note perfect. "Orders from your Yautlek. For the safety of the fleet and the apt and skillful prosecution of this war."
She was, Three Seagrass realized, quoting one of the reclamation songs, song number 16, one of the more obscure ones because it was so long and thus difficult to memorize. "The apt and skillful prosecution of this war." 15 perfect Tix Kalanli syllables, with a caesura in the center. Fuck. But it was a continuous heartbreak that Mahit Dismar had been born a barbarian. But would she have liked her as well, if she hadn't been?
The soldier acting as doorkeep took her sweet time checking her records, though Three Seagrass thought she saw a flush on her dark cheeks, embarrassment or even shame, to be so effortlessly put in her place by a barbarian. Mahit should be proud of herself. She was about to say so, even. They were finally inside with a delicious profusion of audiovisual and holo-recording equipment, arrayed like a bouquet of flowers for their use, and the door shut quite firmly against the doorkeepers outside. But Mahit went straight for the audio play controls. She had the infofiche stick with the intercepted alien noises on it in her hands. And Three Seagrass absolutely didn't have time to tell her that this particular audio play looked like it was preset to full volume repeater before she broke it open. And the familiar, completely hideous noises flooded the room from every direction. The repeater was surround sound. There were speakers in every wall. The horrible static singing sounds were hitting her from every angle instead of just one. They were getting into her bones, Three Seagrass thought, right before she threw up. The noises were getting into her bones and would sing in there forever, and she was going to die of nausea. It stopped. Three Seagrass retched again, helplessly. How brilliant. The first thing Neon Boy does is vomit on the floor of the flagship. Fantastic work on her part. And waited for the waves of queasiness to ease back.
Sorry,
Mahit said, thinly. Three Seagrass looked up. Ah, at least she wasn't the only one to have vomited on the floor. But Mahit had found the off switch for the audio play. 2.5 minutes of that, the length of the recording, would have left the both of them incapacitated, not just embarrassed.
We forgot the bin liners,
she managed, and Mahit looked as if she would laugh if it was something her innards found advisable. Instead, she swiped the back of her hand across her mouth, grimaced, and said,
That was worse than when we listened to it on the shuttle. Much worse.
That audio play is set to repeater. All input is retransmitted through every speaker at every wall in here.
Mahit considered this information, coiled and still, evaluating it, like she was tasting it. Or maybe she was only tasting the sourness of her own mouth, like Three Seagrass was. Then she said,
We need a live alien, not a corpse. I don't disagree, but what makes you bring that up just now?
I think, Mahit said, that if a whole lot of them make those noises in a circle, like the speakers did, it amplifies. A reinforcing sound wave, infrasound, not just what we can hear. I wonder if they know it makes us ill.
I suspect they do,
Three Seagrass said, as dryly as she could manage while looking around for some sort of cloth to wipe up or at least cover 2 persons worth of sick.
They've met a lot more live us than we have live them. Everybody on Paloa 2, for example.
All the more reason we need a live one, said Mahit. The one in the med bay was a mammal. Even if they're scavenger mammals, weren't we the same a long time ago? And they have to be talking in more ways than just this noise.
Some way we can't hear. A sign language or pheromones or...
There were a lot of cabinets in this room, and none of them had anything absorbent in them. Just banks of electronics.
Or structural skin coloration that shifts in patterns. I don't know, anything really.
Probably not pheromones. Pheromones would be more tonal markers for mammals, I think. Comparative zoology is not my specialty.
All right, a live one. Maybe we can make this message good enough, even if it's just tone shrieking into the void, that they'll send over someone we can see.
Three Seagrass opened another cabinet and shut it again in frustration.
Give me your jacket, she said.
Why?
Three Seagrass sighed. Mahit was brilliant and was solving this entire puzzle just like she'd hoped she would, and yet she couldn't recognize why Three Seagrass needed something made out of cloth.
To clean up with, unless you feel like working surrounded by unbin-linered stomach contents?
Why my jacket? Mahit said.
Because mine is a uniform. which at least some of the fleet on this enormous ship recognize as a uniform, and yours is a very nice and very absorbent piece of cloth. We should get you a uniform yourself, really. I'm sure they have some without rank signs, or I can try to adjust one of mine to fit you if you'd rather look like information. It'll save us time later in the hallways.
She trailed off at Mahit's expression, which was as complicatedly hurt as it might have been if Three Seagrass had hit her across the face.
I'm not a fleet member, said Mahit,
too evenly, too sharply.
Nor am I a special envoy of the Information Ministry.
If you're worried about insubordination for wearing a Tixkalanli uniform, I'll take responsibility.
Three Seagrass tried, puzzled as to the severity of Mahit's reaction.
All right, she was being slightly awful about the jacket. She wouldn't have wanted someone to suggest her jacket be used as a rag.
Of course you'd take responsibility, said Mahit. That's always been your job with me, hasn't it? Opening doors and taking responsibility and being an exact legal equivalent for your barbarian, since the very beginning.
I didn't mean that,
Three Seagrass said, shocked. She hadn't. It was a stupid, flippant suggestion, that was all. Not some kind of assumption that Mahit couldn't decide for herself what she should do.
Stars, Mahit. We'll use my jacket instead. Forget it.
She shrugged out of one sleeve, was halfway through the next, apologetically turned away, when Mahit said, as narrow and distantly cold as Three Seagrass had ever heard her,
You didn't mean it, but you said it, Reed.
Her nickname, polished and sharpened to wound. In that mouth, which had not known to say it when 12 Azalea had still been alive. She snapped,
You think I said that, because you can't hear anything but one of us saying you aren't a Tixkalanlitzlim whenever we speak to you.
Snapped, and regretted snapping, and at the same time felt that brutal and brittle glee she always had at getting right to the meat of some argument, some problem, and sinking in her teeth, ready to tear.
Don't you? Asked Mahit. Say that?
She was very still. Very calm. Three Seagrass thought of snakes, of spiders, of all the creatures that stung when threatened.
You remind me I'm a barbarian all the time.
Now, in the city before. And not just you, Three Seagrass. The soldiers in the corridors, too. But at least they have the honesty not to pretend that I'm anything but what Tixkalan thinks I am.
You?
You want to give me uniforms and make me useful. And have a clever, almost human barbarian to show off on your arm. You decide that you want me, and here I am. You decided it'd be useful if your barbarian exercised diplomatic authority, and so I do. You decide I need a uniform, so we don't get stopped in corridors, and you don't think about what it'd look like if you dressed me up like a toy Tixkalanlitzlim.
I asked,
Three Seagrass said. And she had asked, hadn't she? She'd asked every time. She was almost sure she'd asked.
She'd never given Mahit orders, she wouldn't. The idea was absurd.
But Mahit ignored her and kept going, like words were an infection she was squeezing from a wound.
And you'd have liked it if I'd stayed with you in the palace, wouldn't you have? You could have had me all this time to amuse you and not had to come all the way to a war.
Before she could stop herself, Three Seagrass said,
Would that have been so awful? You staying with me?
Distantly, she thought it'd be absolutely terrible if she started crying. She'd never cried in arguments, not since she had grown big enough to leave the creche. Mahit did all sorts of things to her that she'd never expected, made her feel all sorts of new and complicated kinds of everything, including, apparently, hurt and miserable. All she'd done was suggest that a uniform might make things simpler. And now they were going to have this fight, which felt awful and unfixable, and like Mahit had been saving it up, waiting for the inevitable point where she couldn't stand Three Seagrass any longer and did this to whatever it was they had between them.
No, said Mahit.
It wouldn't have been terrible to stay with you. Which is why I didn't.
That makes no sense.
Mahit had sat herself down at the central conference table, and now she put her face in her palms and hid her eyes from Three Seagrass. The last time they'd been around a conference room table, they'd stopped a usurpation with poetry.
Now they couldn't even write a message together, because they were having the most useless, incomprehensible, horrible argument Three Seagrass could remember having since her ex-girlfriend Nine Arch had broken up with her in the middle of exams during their second year of a secretet training.
It doesn't make sense,
Three Seagrass said again, louder.
It doesn't. I'm sorry about the uniforms and the jacket, and I won't mention it again, but you aren't being explicable, understandable, civilized.
Fuck,
said Three Seagrass, hearing as she said it how her voice had gone narrow and high, uncontrolled.
If you didn't want to come with me here, you didn't have to.
Mahit took her hands down and looked Three Seagrass straight in the face. It felt like her gaze had weight. Weight and edges. A sudden revealed landscape of places to cut oneself open on. Again, Three Seagrass found herself wondering, what of this person was Mahit Dismar? And what was Yaskandar Agavan? And if all the ruinous confusion between them now was born of Mahit's precious Imago technology, or if she'd never understood her. Not really. Only pretended to. Only pretended. Like they were pretending they understood something of these aliens and their incomprehensible language that hurt humans to hear. Three Seagrass dropped her eyes first. Mahit said, "Read." Softly, and Three Seagrass looked up again, heliotropic, compelled.
Yes?
She asked. When you figure out why I did have to come with you, we can talk again.
Again? At all?
There was something horrible in the idea, that she'd gone so far wrong that she wouldn't even have a chance to keep going, keep trying. That there was some flaw in everything that was invisible to her. She didn't know why Mahit couldn't have stayed on the cell. Politics, of course, but there were other avenues than this mad gambit of a trip to the edge of a war to get out of politics. Mahit hadn't told her why. She knew she hadn't told her why. She'd avoided telling her quite deliberately, and now she was somehow supposed to figure it out?
We have work to do, said Mahit, which wasn't an answer at all. We need to get one of these things to think this fleet is worth talking to.
They did have work to do, and less than 6 hours until the Yautlek would want that work. And yet, Three Seagrass felt like she couldn't think through the urge to cry, to grab Mahit by the arm and shake her until she explained, until she stopped being...
Oh, say it, Reed, to yourself if no one else.
Uncivilized. Refusing to participate, like an animal or a child. The silence between them dragged onward, endless and misshapen, as if gravity was off kilter, the great engines of weight for the wheel shifted out of true, the universe undoing itself from its unexpected course. The room smelled of acidic vomit. Three Seagrass didn't know what to say. Everything she'd said so far had made things worse. She sat down at the table, 2 chairs away from where Mahit was. It was better than her other option, which was storming out of the room. She needed Mahit. And she needed to do the job she'd set herself when the request for a special envoy came into the Information Ministry. She should never have been allowed to be here. Almost everything about her being here was unauthorized. Aside from the fact that she was very, very good, and that she'd found the smartest person she knew to help her with the linguistics and the culture shock of first contact, and that technically she had the requisite rank in the ministry. But if she didn't manage it, she wouldn't have a career. Also, probably a whole lot of Taixkalan Leetslam would die at the hands of these invaders, considering what they'd done on Paloa II. And how the Yautlek was clearly having political problems with one of her fleet captains.
of which she had only 5. Hardly enough to prevent an alien attack force from spilling through the jump gate and into Takes Kalanli space proper. A lot of dead people. If 3 Seagrass didn't figure out how to talk to aliens. Which was more important than her career. If less immediately stomach-churning. And here was Mahit, waiting for her. Or waiting for something. The gulf of silence felt uncrossable. She crossed it anyway.
"Start with the 3rd sound," she said. "The one they make only when they're approached too closely. And combine it with, oh, the last one. The one that they made when they were chasing Knife Point. I think that's a victory sound."
"Approach danger plus hurrah we win," Mahit said, dry as dust. "Could be worse. I hope we're right about hurrah we win. Otherwise we're saying something like, approach danger and we're going to chase you."
"Do you have a better idea?" asked 3 Seagrass,
and was more gratified than she could bear to think about when Mahit nodded. And they began to get to work in earnest.